going to be reading, as you notice, we're not really the youngest people in the congregation here, but we find it very hard to remember things. So even though we've been working diligently on our script, we'll be reading a fair bit. So good morning to us all, to you, and especially to you, James. Thank you for helping us to come to this and for that lovely introduction, an introduction which is just so much sort of what we want to talk about as well. So thanks for inviting us. Always very welcome here. And I was just going to say a word when we sang that first song of remembering not just what James was talking about also, but to remember Paul. I think Carol's here somewhere. And we've come to just love Paul's songs, and they're just so, they're just great. We love them. So thanks for all that. And thanks for the musos. So we're going to make it a sort of a Q&A.
Yes.
I've gone off the script a bit, haven't I, already?
You have, just.
we're going to quiz each other about our most fortunate lives, because we do think that we've had fortunate lives, both of us, and invite your own reflections at the end. Someone said they're going to ask us some very difficult questions at the end, but we've got so much here to talk about, it might be a chance for those questions. So, hello, Heather, again.
Hello, Harry. Get on with it.
It's your turn.
Oh, is it? Oh. Hello, Harold. I believe your mother called you Harold instead of Harry when you were being a bit naughty.
Me, naughty? No, never. Well, hardly ever.
And yes, Harry, can I say on behalf of us both that we think this is a wonderful place, a good community to be with. And I do want to keep coming here when I can, when I'm not playing the music with the Lutherans in Northbridge. Life changes, good and bad, big ones and minor ones, about events, things, people we have experienced in what you call and we call our fortunate journeys. Yes, let's share, and we hope as we reminisce, you might reflect too on your life changes.
Yes. Well, anyway, Heather, let's start off, tell us a bit about your mum and dad and your family.
Well, I was born here, King Edward, in 1936, and they named me Heather Joan Grabner. My dad was Martin Rudolph Grabner, good old German name, born in America and came to Australia when he was 11 or 12 and went on to become a pastor in the Lutheran Church. And actually his father was head of the Lutheran Seminary at that time. He married Doris, and they had two boys, Bob and Everard, but sadly Doris died soon after childbirth with Everard. After some years, Dad married my mother. He married again to Edna Grabner from Darlington. Well, Edna Fisher she was then. And they had three children, Ruth, Andrew and me, the afterthought. So I was born in Perth 9 years after my big sister Ruth. Dad was a pastor from 1914 to his retirement in 1966 at St John's Lutheran Church in Northbridge. I think he decided the church needed stability. It's a little stone church, built from the stone from my grandfather Fisher's property in Darlington, and I was the first baby christened on the day that the church building was dedicated. So I'm as old as the old stone church. I believe my father decided that the Perth congregation needed stability, having lost many members during both world wars because of the German connotations. So he quietly refused a number of calls to serve in parishes in the eastern states. My personal opinion is he was happy to stay away from the Lutheran church hierarchy in Adelaide. That's just my opinion. Dad spoke perfect German, had actually lectured in German at UWA because there were so few members and he needed the money to support the family, until he was sacked in 1939, despite having two sons fighting in the war. Then he was a godsend in hundreds of European New Australians. You remember them all that came in 1950. He used to go to Fremantle Port and meet the boats. We used to go to the camps. I used to play a little pedal organ and accompany him while he had church services in German to all these new displaced poor people. Later, all this influx of new Australians brought two special people into our family. A beautiful blonde Russian wife for my brother Andrew, and a brave Polish refugee husband for me. I must say, though, that one of the first big life-changer events came when I was about 10. Big sister Ruth had met at church a visiting American serviceman, Ray Johnson, who was a radio operator on the Catalina flying planes. They courted, and after the war, she ventured across to America at the age of 19 and married and had a wonderful family of six children. But I think it broke my mum's heart to say goodbye to her beautiful 20-year-old daughter. But back home, all of a sudden, our little church was filling to overflowing, and Dad was busy taking worship services at the various migrant camps. And I was accompanying him as a 15, 16-year-old on a little pedal organ or piano, whatever. My dear mother lived to celebrate her 100th birthday and was the rock of the church. She was beloved, crying by so many who she came into contact. She brought us, her children, up with so much love and welcomed so many needy to share around the table. We ate an awful lot of rabbit during the war years, and the rabbits were cheap then, and all with a beautiful smile. I look back and wonder how she managed to feed, clothe and nurture us with so little money coming into the household. She was loved by all. And as Harry said, we celebrated her 100th birthday around her bed at the nursing home. On Sunday, all the family had a Holy Communion service with our pastor, and she quietly passed away on Tuesday. So I reckon she just wanted to get to that 100. As for myself, my two brothers fought in the war, but it's going on a bit, this. As for myself, in early years, I enjoyed five happy years at Perth Mod, became a teacher, taught in the country for 1 year, and then married my wonderful Polish Victor. Then a big life changer again at the age of 54. Victor suddenly collapsed on our back lawn one Saturday morning and died of a heart attack. And all of a sudden I had to go back teaching after not teaching for 23 years. So that was an awful shock. So anyway, I enjoyed it. And at the same time, my mum had moved into a unit over the road from us. So life goes on, and I'm very grateful for my life up to that point till I met him. What about you, Harold?
What about me? Well, I was born in Ballarat. over in Victoria. I went to school in Melbourne and Geelong. Mum was Irish, and with Dad, they were very, very good Catholics. And they were good parents. They were very productive. There were four of us boys, all Tiger supporters, and two girls. I was a dedicated altar boy from about 10 years old, like even weekdays as well as Sundays, going to Mass in the dark during the winter of Melbourne. And thanks to a very charismatically wonderful priest who was on the lookout for more priests, future priests, I ended up joining a junior seminary near Geelong when I was, oh dear, I was 12 years old and just coming into year nine. That was my first big life changer. I was there for the next 5 years with some great mates. I would go home for school holidays, but I did love my life there and I loved school. But looking back, I obviously missed out greatly on family life that my other five siblings experienced.
And did you did 7 or 8 years in a major seminary then, studying philosophy, theology and scripture. Was it a local seminary?
No. The order that I was in didn't have their own seminary here in Australia, so six of us all travelled over to South Africa for the next 7 years. And we were finally ordained in the Durban Cathedral by that great anti-apartheid fighter, Archbishop Dennis Hurley. Those 7 years were very happy ones, but definitely it was another life changer for me. I was a young Aussie fellow meeting and living with some Zulu and Indian seminarians, getting to know for the first time in my previously all-white life, and facing the discrimination of the apartheid system on a daily basis, and only connecting with Mum and Dad just by fortnightly letters. Although they did ring me up. They were allowed to ring me up for my 21st birthday.
Can you share with us about your life as a Catholic priest for the next 17 years or so?
Well, nearly all of those years I was appointed to teach in Catholic boys' schools, colleges, which was also, looking back, a continuation of accepted celibacy and in community with all male priestly communities. I was a pretty outgoing sort of a priest. I loved life in the college with the boys, lots of school, lots of sport, socialising with families. Then after 1 year of teaching, I was appointed by my superior provincial to be the national vocations director. In other words, I had to go around to schools and workshops and for six very not so enjoyable years trying to get boys to join the priesthood. I do think, however, a big life changer came during those later years when I was now in my late 30s. Within the community and the whole Catholic Church at that time, there was the start of big rumblings, something like this. The outcomes of the adventurous and exciting Second Vatican Council, which was led by Pope John the 23rd, which most young priests were hungry to help bring to life in Catholic communities and parishes, they were being debated and questioned, even denigrated by conservative, not wanting change sort of priests and especially bishops. And that had many of us, or many of my fellow priests, I suppose, really having second thoughts about the priesthood itself. And something pretty much unheard of in years gone by. Firstly, there was a little trickle of priests who were leaving, and it was starting to then, by the time I was getting up to 40, it was becoming quite the thing to be leaving the priesthood. I do remember whatever school or sometimes parish I'd been working in, I did form friendships. I was a friendly fellow, and I made friendships with families. I did make good friendships with women. Sometimes the temptations to make not-so-healthy relationships were lurking about. But I always remember the very first moment, for the first time, when I had the thought of actually leaving the priesthood. I spoke to several close priest friends. I tried to follow their advice, to be really honest about it all. There I was, back here in Western Australia at the time, at a college up in Mazenod College, up in Les Mourdes. I asked for a year off. I went back to my own family in Victoria, spoke openly with them, got a teaching job, and truly, for 3 or 4 years onwards, I really battled with decision making. Should I go back in? Should I leave altogether? What does God want me to do? That question, what is God's will for me, was paramount in my mind and conscience just about every day. But I could not decide. How do you find out God's will? I just didn't know which way to go. So a special day came for me when I flew up to Sydney to talk to a fellow priest whom I really respected so much. He was also a clinical psychologist. He gave me the usual inkblot tests and asked me about my childhood and so on. And in the end, he asked me one question. He said, "Harry, this is how I believe that we find out God's will. In your best, most honest moments, what do you really want to do? God has given you the wherewithal to choose what you think is the best and right thing to do." And I did choose there and then, after three or four years, I chose there and then to write to the Vatican and asked to leave my priesthood behind. So I'm sure that visit to Sydney to Father Des O'Donnell was definitely a big life changer for me. That led me to Melbourne Airport, to come back again to Perth, to sign up for a counselling course that I'd heard so much about. It was organised by a Catholic priest here in Perth, Father Des Murphy, and Sister Dr. Patrice Cook, who had a small Christian community. I joined 22 others. Well, they were searching souls as well, in different ways. We would meet one night a week for 3.5 years, as well as 3 or 4 weekends away up in Jarrodale, four times a year. Our get-togethers weren't lessons or classes. They were just things like, what's the good news? What have you got any bad news this week, or have you got any good news? What's been happening in your life? And we would sit on those old beanbags and share. Tell people how we felt. I guess it was my very first experience ever of sustained open talk, brave sharing, bonding with people from many walks of life. By the time I finished that, I was 44 years old when I started. And looking back, they were my big growing up years. I've often said the time and years in the counselling group were the biggest and perhaps the best life changes in my life.
And it was quite amazing that at the end of that part of your life, you were driving home after a farewell working bee at Jarrodale, and I was visiting a friend and met you in the driveway of your duplex. The lady who I was visiting, who was Harry's landlady, said when she saw Harry going past, "Harry, why don't you come in? Meet this person." And so Harry came bounding into the lounge room, and the rest is history.
Yes, we are married, and we've been married now for 36 years. We both had some journey changes in that time. Heather, let's talk about some persons in our lives whose their lives and charisma have affected us deeply.
Well, coincidentally today, September the 18th, is the birthday of a woman named Kirsten Wibiker. She was a single German would-be Catholic church worker in her early 20s. When she visited Australia, back in Germany, she had done faith, scripture and theology studies, came to Australia on a work experience kind of adventure. She was so enthusiastic to become a good Catholic church worker. Then, somewhere in the beautiful forests and mountains of Tasmania, she met a handsome Chinese backpacker, Jeremy Koo, who was also single and already a young doctor. They fell in love, teamed up, and ended up here in Perth, where they got married. Kirsten looked around the Catholic newspapers and bulletins, but one day saw an ad from the Perth Lutheran Church looking for an office worker. This little book, In Perth for Good, gives her a mention on page 47.
And I'm going to read a little bit of it out.
Now?
Now.
Is that all right?
Okay.
This was written by a wonderful pastor at the time. He wrote this whole book, but he said, there was one outstanding applicant for the job after the interviews with four or five people, and that one was Kirsten Wibicki-Koo. She had grown up in Germany and studied theology and church ministry. She had made that holiday trip to Australia, but there was one catch. How could we employ a practicing member of the Catholic Church to become a Lutheran church worker? And it says, much for the spiritual maturity of the people of St. John's, that she was totally accepted with respect. She also brought new insights and understanding. Thank you.
But Kirsten, now Kirsten Wibicki-Koo, and with two children with Dr. Jeremy, is not just a mention. She was a dynamic office worker, ecumenist, carer, welcomer on weekdays, and absolute inspiration to us all, especially us two. I worked a lot with her. She got our church alive and really on fire, and how one person can make a difference to a church. She was an initiator, an amazing leader in bringing us to the Alpha program, the mental health support group, organising free English lessons to migrants. Such a happy and generous Jesus person, but sadly only for a short time, cancer. And she died at 40. The cancer took her in 18 months. A few days before her last breath, she called Harry and me to her bedside. And she promised us, if we sang and reflected on Psalm 139, "Search me, O God," at her funeral, she'd sing it with the good Lord. And maybe she's somewhere doing the same song with us on her, I think it's probably her 50th birthday today, Kirsten Wibicki-Koo, a life changer to many of us.
So happy birthday, Kirsten, to you up there. And thank you, James, for organising those for us this morning, the psalm and the song. May I add that this September 18th has also got another significance for us today. It's birthday for two of our stalwarts in our much-loved Spirit of the Streets choir that Heather and I have been with for 14 or 15 years now. And also for Wendy's turning 70 today, and we're having a bit of a party down at her place. And also her one-time carer, Irene, who was a champion person as well. It's just that since we two, about the same time we turned 70 ourselves, have been belonging to that community, which has also been a life changer, I think, for both of us. Heather has made about, it's estimated at 58,000 pikelets. and we've sung songs and been very happy with lovely friendship, socialising, the excitement of belonging to a choir. And especially because we've got a man called Bernard Carney as the leader, someone who, just like Kirsten, as Heather spoke about her, he's been an inspiring legend of a leader, talented, patient, social justice advocate, a lively sense of humour and wit, a living legend. And many hundreds of people who've been through the choir would testify to that as well.
Finally, we want to tell you about Rachel, and we could spend hours on her life and how she helped us both. Some of you might have heard of Rachel Helt Evans. You know of Rachel Helt Evans? Was born in 1991 in Alabama, USA. She and her family were regular Anglicans, or Episcopal in America. After school, she majored in English literature and wrote for American newspapers, first as a humorist, then wrote about moving from a faith of certainty to a faith that explores doubt and questioning. She had questions about the way Americans were taught about the whole Bible, Jesus, and indeed the churches. She read, she studied, she reflected. She married Dan Helt, her college boyfriend. So she became Rachel Helt Evans. They had two children, and between 2012 and 2018, she wrote three books, all absolute bestsellers. And the names of the books, Harry?
Yes, the names of the books do give the message. Her first book in 2012 was A Year of Biblical Womanhood. How a liberated woman found herself sitting on her roof, covering her head and calling her husband Master. That was her first book.
And she spent a year studying, living like many and varied biblical women to write that book.
Then in 2015, she wrote the book Searching for Sunday, which is also a sort of a subtitle of the book, Loving, Leaving and Finding Again the Church. Then in 2018, she wrote this book, Inspired, and we want to give these two books to MHCC to be, if you've got a library or if people want to read it and so on. It's made a huge impression with us, and what happened
it,
then,
it
Heather?
Was slaying, we won't talk
so
about
So it's called
that.
Inspired, so, yes. Yeah.
And then in 2019, just before, about the same time as Inspired was printed, she died, aged 37. She went into hospital, I think, with something with the brain, a tumour or something, infection on the brain, and within a week she had tragically died. Just a terrible tragedy. So she was 37 and leaving Dan and two small children.
But I think they're books that more than any other books we've ever read have helped us to develop. Can I just read one little passage here? She writes, Scripture is not an answer book. It's not even a book, really. It's a diverse library of ancient texts, genres, so many centuries of culture, influenced so much by oral traditions that have been passed down. The scriptures Jesus knew about were nothing like the specialty Bibles that we have in our churches and in our bookshops. Jews were still debating which texts should be included in the scripture canons 100 years after Jesus died. And Christians were even still arguing over the contents and shape of the canon of the Bible well into the Protestant Reformation. Heather doesn't mind me saying this a little bit either. Luther, for example, Martin Luther, wanted to leave out the book, the Epistle of St. James. He called it an epistle of straw. So there's an awful lot of wonderful teaching in her books about the way we read the Bible. And Heather, you're going to now finish up reading.
Just the last little bit of Inspired. I wish I could read more of it, actually. Rachel finishes this book, and she's really telling the Bible stories in a different, goes through the whole Bible in a slightly different way. Children ask questions all the time. Psychologists say the best way to handle children at this stage of development is not to answer their questions directly, but instead to tell them a story. And Rachel says, really, that's what partly the Bible is telling us, a story. Questions are a child's way of expressing love and trust. They are a child's way of starting a conversation. Sometimes as I'm holding my son or sitting quietly, my son will crawl into my lap, put his head on my chest, and just listen to the story I'm telling him. His questions quieted, his body relaxed. And I realise this is all he wanted to begin with, to be near me, to hear the familiar cadence of my voice, to know he's safe and not alone. We grown-ups are no different. We scurry around the world, grabbing bits of theology here and pieces of philosophy there. Bibles tucked under our arms as we point frantically at every question and every mystery that befalls us, asking, da, 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 like a child. What's that? What's that? We may wish for answers, but God rarely gives us answers. Instead, God gathers us up into soft, familiar arms and says, let me tell you a story.
Thank you.
Sorry, it was all a bit long.
We'll leave these two books. Have you got a little library here? Or people borrowing, whatever?
Oh, questions there, they don't go away.
Or if anyone wants to share anything that comes to their mind.
I was just wondering, did you have a family?
Yes, I had four children.
Oh, yes.
So I had three in 3 years. Number three coming quite unexpectedly, and he actually has an intellectual disability and it is now 59 years old. And then 10 years later, surprise, surprise, my last beautiful son, yes. So four children and eight grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. So I'm very blessed.
Hey, Harry, sorry, you mentioned leaving the priesthood. How hard a process was that for you to go through in terms of how were you treated by the authorities and all that sort of thing?
Well, firstly, the Vatican took... when John Paul died and then the next pope, remember he only lasted about a week, and the new pope who came in was... the Polish priest, John Paul II, that's right. And he really stopped the laicization. He stopped the big, as I said, it was quite a raging river of fellas leaving and all that. So it took a long time for that even to come through. But as far as my own priests were concerned, I still kept in touch with many of the priests about my age or younger. And there were just a few older priests who sort of wiped their hands off me, and because I just thought it was so terrible and evil and that. But anyway, that's about the way it was.
Yeah, so many priests are coming in from South America, I think, and Africa, and very few being ordained in Australia, I think.
A quick one, Harry. Can you just remind us what year that was? What year you were?
I asked for a leave of absence in 1978, and I eventually got the dispensation in about 1986, I think. Yeah.
It took them a long time to read your letter, didn't it?
Yes, yes.
No, I think Yeah, when we had first met, I think you got it there. Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Thank you.
So. Okie doke. Thank you very much. Thank you.